Okay, continuing with our topic of Melechas Machsheves, so we introduced last week that there are all different kinds of factors that play a very important role to a person's liability for a violation of Shabbos, depending on what his intent was, what he knew, what he didn't know, what he had in mind, what just the circumstances that surround us. So last week we introduced two basic concepts. The first concept we introduced was a shogeg. When someone violates Shabbos, unintentionally, by mistake, he forgot a very important piece of information. He knew something and he forgot it. In other words, he knew that it's forbidden to cook on Shabbos, but he forgot that either today's Shabbos or he forgot today, it happens to be for some reason, just completely slipped his mind that cooking is one of the forbidden acts on Shabbos. So that's a shogeg. Classic case of when someone violates Shabbos by mistake. That is shogeg. There's a lot to talk about. We're not going to spend so much time on that. The topic of shogeg is actually a very interesting topic, exactly how you calculate a person forgets several malachas, if a person forgets one. And the Gemara in Kol HaGadol discusses it at length. What we discussed last week more at length was the concept of a misasik. Misasik means a person is doing something which is mutter. He knows, he's convinced, he's a well-learned person. He's very well aware of what's going on. He knows that it is perfectly permitted to pick up a vegetable off the floor and eat it, because the vegetable is not connected to the ground, vegetables are not muktzah, vegetables are healthy. He picks up a vegetable, he wants to eat it. Problem was, he was missing a factual piece of information. He had no idea that this vegetable is connected to the ground. In other words, he knows everything. He's fully aware of what happens, but in this specific circumstance that he finds himself in, he's missing information about that. And therefore, while he is convinced and actually correct that what he believes he is doing is mutter, a hidden piece of information says that what he's doing is actually a problem. In such a case, we discuss what the halacha is. Ultimately, we had a discussion whether it's going to be mutter lechatchila, which is completely permissible, or if it is, you know, just putter in hindsight. How exactly will you have a case where that would make a difference? Because again, the whole thing is talking about what a person doesn't know. You only find out afterwards. We discussed, let's say there are two people in the room. One person knows all the information, another person doesn't. Does the second person need to point it out to him to stop him? Because if it's completely permissible, if it's mutter, then he doesn't have to point it out. That was the discussion from last week. This week, we're moving on to another topic another subcategory in this topic, which is the concept of davar she'ein miskaven. That means he does something, he has an unintentional result of his action. In other words, he is involved in something which is completely permissible. It is perfectly mutter to do what he's doing. The problem is that it's possible that as a result, as a byproduct, I should say, of his action, something else might happen. The classic example of this is an example that comes up all over the place, it's referred to in Shas as Grera. Grera literally means when he either schlepping on the ground or pulling. What happens is a person is transporting a bench from one side of his yard to the other one, and that's fine. Thanks for joining us, Alex. And you're always welcome. So it's perfectly permissible for a person to drag his bench from one side of his yard to the other one. You can move a bench, there's no problem if I saw it's in his backyard. You work out a situation where everything is perfectly, perfectly permissible, and there's no reason why he wouldn't be able to carry his bench. Now, problem is that when he pulls the bench as a secondary result of what he's doing, he may actually dig a furrow in the ground. Now, digging in the ground, making any improvement in the ground, is a violation of one of the lametes of his melachas of chayrish, of working the ground. So he has no intention to make a furrow, he has no intention to dig a hole, but as he's pulling the bench, it may result from his action. So that's the davar she'ein miskaven. He has no intent to dig a furrow, but his action causes that to happen. So we're going to discuss what the halacha is in that case. And this, it should be noted that we're going to see that this is a topic which doesn't only It's not only relevant with regard to Shabbos, it's relevant in many other areas in halacha as well. We're going to see there are some differences with regard to Shabbos, and it could be that many of us are familiar with this topic already, but ultimately it's important for us to solidify the facts in this case, because what motivated me to go through all this is because as we were learning a lot of the different halachas of Shabbos, we started dealing with practical cases, and we have to realize that all these rules that we're going to be going through on a week-to-week basis, they play a very important role in almost every shiloh that comes up on Shabbos. And this is really the underlying mechanisms that we need to know in order to determine whether something is permissible or something is forbidden on Shabbos. So the Gemara, the first source that we're going to discuss is as follows. It's a Gemara on Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chal, I'm sorry, and Daf Chav Pei Zaman Aleph. I'm sorry I didn't underline it. But if you go all the way at the end, the last line, it says, V'halacha k'rabi Shimon b'greira. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon when it comes to greira. Greira is the case we described, where a person is dragging a bench. To Tanya, for we learned in a brisa, Rabbi Shimon says, Greira adam mita kisei v'safsa. A person is allowed to drag either a bed, a chair, or a bench, as long as it is not his intention to dig a ditch or to dig a furrow. So the Gemara paskens like Reb Shimon. Yehuda disagrees with this. Yehuda is of the opinion that Davar Shimon's Kavan is Aser. And the Gemara over here is saying very clearly that the Halach is like Rabbi Shimon. Where else do we find this concept out of Shabbos? So this comes up in a few places. We saw it in the morning in Maseches Kilayim. But here, the Gemara in Maseches Nazir, the Mishnah writes as follows: Nazir chayfif u'mafasris avalei sarik. And Nazir, he is not allowed to take a haircut. What if his head itches him? Can he scratch his head? So halacha is yes, he can scratch his head. Avalei sarik, he can't use a comb, because a comb, we're going to get to the concept of where it's inevitable that it's going to be a result. A comb is certainly going to pull out some of his hair. But to scratch his head, it's not inevitable that it's going to result in the action of pulling out hair. So he can scratch his head, because it's not necessarily going to pull out his hair. The Gemara explains, chayfa from a phosphis, it's in this source. Mani, who is the author of this opinion? Rabbi Shimon, he is Rabbi Shimon. Amar, for he says, Darvash Shimon's Kavan Mutter. Shimon says, Darvash Shimon's Kavan Mutter. It's not his intention to pull out any hair. He just wants to get the itch out of his head. So he's allowed to scratch up. Aloy Sarek, the Gemara says, let's stop there because we're gonna get a little bit confusing. What? What do you mean? Right, okay, so it's a very good point. I'll get back to that later in the share, and if I don't come over to afterwards, it's just that we're very pressed on time, and I want to get all the concepts in, but I'll address that. Source number three. Tana Rabbana. This is the Gemara in Shabbos. Mila Teches at Saras. The Gemara is discussing the concept of Mila, circumcision on Shabbos. The Gemara says not only is Mila, a circumcision, not only does that take, you know, does that push away the halachas of Shabbos, a person is allowed to do a Mila on Shabbos. It's also Teches Saras. It takes precedence when there is Saras. What would be such a case? The Gemara says, Bein Bezmana, Bein Shle Bezmana. The Gemara says at the end, Yimol Basara Lasei. The pasuk says Yimol Basara Lasei. The last line in source number three, person should circumcise the skin, the foreskin. The af al pishyeshan baharis yikaitz. Even if there is a baharis, is one of the types of tzaras. Even if the child has tzaras, there's an iser. There's a prohibition of cutting off tzaras, taking off tzaras, leprosy. There's an iser to take it off. But if there is tzaras in the place where the mila is supposed to take place, you still perform the bris mila. Now, this is a very interesting line. This is a very important and interesting line. Source number four, the Gemara says as follows. Amar mar, basar, afal pi sheisham baharis, yimol divar Rav Yosha. The person is yimol basar or lasa. The pasuk is teaching us that when a person has, if a person has tzaras in the place where they are, where he is said to do the bris mila, you should still do it. The Gemara says, Halam alikra. Why do you need a pasuk to teach you that you should still do the bris mila? Davar Shemes Kavanu. He has no intention of cutting off the tzaras. It's not his intent. He's not trying to cut off tzaras. He's trying to perform a mitzvah of bris mila. This opinion is going according to Rabbi Yehuda. We mentioned Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says that even if a person does not intend for this result to happen, nevertheless, it is aser. And the Gemara says, this pasuk is teaching you that you're allowed to do the bris milah even according to Rabbi Yehuda. And that is a fascinating idea, because it seems like we have a pasuk weighing in on the machlaikas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. That means that according to Rabbi Yehuda, without this pasuk, Darvash Miskavim would have been Asami Dei Raisa. Right? If the pasuk itself passes to Eli, the pasuk itself needs to address this issue, then it comes out, just logically speaking, if you need a pasuk to teach you to do a bris milah according to Rabbi Yehuda, even though it's a Darvash Miskavim, it must be that according to Yehuda, the Isser of Darvash Miskavim is an Isser Midaret. It's a very important point to keep in mind. We are going to see very shortly that according to Rashi, that's not true. Source number 5, Rashi's Meseches Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. Forget about the Dibur Maschel. I'm not learning that Gemara. The Gemara says as follows. In the second line, if it dies, this you're talking about something that he's stepping on. If it dies as he's walking, according to Rabbi Yehuda, davar shem eskaven, which is aser. In other words, a person violating Shabbos in a fashion where what he's doing is permitted, but a byproduct, a secondary result of his action, comes out to be a violation of Shabbos, which is not his intention. According to the way Rashi explains it, according to Buddha, that's Aser. Why is it Aser? It's only Aser Midrabana. Taisus in source number 6. This is Daf Mem Aleph Amud Beis in Maseches Shabbos. Taisus is very clear. He says the same thing. V'le Aser lei Rabbi Yehuda Davar Shem Eskaven Ela Midrabana. That Rabbi Yehuda says Davar Shem Eskaven is Aser is only Midrabana. And he quotes this problem, this issue, that if that's true, that Yehuda was only the Isser of Davar Shem Eskaven is only Midrabanan, then why do we need a pasuk? So he addresses the point. So Taisus says something very important. Taisus says that this is a very important point. When it comes to every other Isser in the Torah, for example, a Nazir or Kilayim, and a person wears shatnez, but he's not wearing shatnez with intention to wear shatnez. He's trying to show someone how this jacket looks. He doesn't have intention to derive any benefit from the jacket. Or a case of Nazir, he's scratching his head and some hair comes out. Not his intention to take any hair out. In that case, we have this discussion of Davar Shem Eskaven. Says Taisus, ultimately, it would not be mutar lechatchila according to anybody. On Shabbos, he says, Hani mili, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Davar Shem Eskaven and the rest of the Torah is Asr Min HaTorah. But when it comes to Shabbos, it's only Asr Midrabanan because of this concept of Melechus Mashav. Let's just get this straight. We have one place where it's clear with regard to Tzaras. The Gemara says, if not for a pasuk according to Rabbi Yehuda, it would have been forbidden for them to perform the bris milah. That's clear. If the pasuk is coming to address this issue, it would have been Isma Deraisa. Says Taisus, you know why? Because that is referring to Kol HaTorah Kula. Every other Isser in the Torah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Davar Shem Eskaven is going to be awesome in HaTorah. However, when it comes to Shabbos, even Rabbi Yehuda is going to agree it's only awesome Midrabanan. Why? Because Shabbos, as we explained last week, and we're going to continue explaining throughout all the rest of these weeks, is that there's this concept of Melechus Machshavos. You need to perform the Melechus on Shabbos in the prescribed way, the same way they did it in the Mishkan. They had every intention to fulfill their actions exactly the way it was supposed to be. So you have to replicate that on Shabbos. So therefore, when it comes to Shabbos, even though in every other area of the Torah, Yehuda says it's an Isser Midaraisa to violate Shabbos, even through Davar Shem Eskaven, when it comes to Isurim on Shabbos, that would only be Midrabanan. How do we paskin? Source number 7, Shulchan Aruch. This is in Simon Shinlam and Zayin Sef Aleph. The Mechaber writes as follows. Davar Shem Eskaven, mutter. Davar Shem Eskaven is not only putter, not only that he does not need to bring a karbon, it is mutter. A person may do something on Shabbos if there's a chance that a result from that action will be a malacha, because it is not his intention. However, Mechaber continues and he writes, but that's as long as it's not a psikresha. What is a psikresha? Source number 8. This is the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. Rav Amar Filu Tei Rishimim Moed Rishimim Psikresha L'Bilei Yomos. This is just kind of like a wild example, but the Gemara says, the Rambam actually writes it very clearly, we'll see in the next source, that don't ask me too many questions, it was pretty normal for a child to play with the head of a dead chicken. I don't know what he did with it, but if a person wants to give his child something to play with, and he says, you know what, there's a chicken in the yard, I'll take the head off. Now, I have no intention of killing the chicken. I'd be very happy if the chicken stays alive. I'd be very happy for the chicken to continue running around the backyard. But the problem is I need to remove its head to give my child something to play with. Now, that's obviously an illogical statement. You can't do that. So now, you can't say, well, I didn't kill the chicken. I just took the head off. Because those two things are interconnected very strongly. It happens to be we're running short on time. I would love to share with you. Maybe we'll get it in anyway. Reb Nachum from the Mir, he has a very good explanation as to what to the lumdus behind this. But ultimately, when something is inevitable, when something is going to happen without any doubt, you can't start pulling the davarsh in the skaven car. You can't say, I didn't intend for that to happen, because it is connected to your action. You can't say that I took the head off the chicken, I didn't have in mind to kill it. Because removing the head of the chicken, by definition, is killing the chicken. So whenever we use the term psikresha, it's kind of like a euphemism that we're just borrowing from the concept. Since that concept is so easy to understand, no one would ever buy it from someone who said, I didn't kill the chicken, I just took its head off. No one would ever buy that as being a logical statement. So we always borrow that every time we want to use that concept. In other words, you can't say you didn't have in mind to dig a furrow in your backyard if you had this massively heavy bench with very sharp and pointy legs, which are digging into very soft ground. If you're going to pull, everybody knows that if the ground is very soft and the bench is very heavy and the legs are very sharp, it's impossible to claim that I didn't have any intention to make a furrow, because that's just the reality. So that, even Reb Shimon, who says Davar Shem Eskaven is going to be mutter, that is only when it may happen, it may not happen. But if you know it's going to happen, you can't pull that card anymore. And that's clear in the Gemara. Now, what we're going to point out in source number 9 and 10 and 11 is exactly how we define a psikreshus. Look in source number 9, Halacha Vav, in the Rambam. This Rambam is in Hilchas Shabbos. It's in Parak Aleph of Hilchas Shabbos, Halacha Vav. Asa Maisa, person does an action. V'nasas Begloli Malacha Shavadai Teyasa. He does something and then there is a certain result that a malacha will happen. Shavadei tasa b'shvil oisei maisa afa pishle miskavan l'chayiv. Even though he didn't have intention for it, he's chayiv. Why? Shehadavar yaduash i'efshar shalei tasa oisei malacha. Rambam explains, it's known, everybody knows, that it's impossible to separate your action from that result. Since you know it's going to happen, so then when you do it, simply saying that I didn't intend for it to a certain extent is a bit of a lie. You knew that what you were doing was going to result in this action. You knew you're going to cut the chicken's head off, it's going to die. So saying I didn't intend for it really is a lie, because ultimately it's connected. Rashi, however, says something different. This Gemara, in the next source, is the Gemara in Zvachim and Daf Tzadik Aleph Amud Beis. The Gemara is talking about the person who gives a donation of wine as a carbon. So what they do is they would pour it on top of the fire. Now the problem is you're not allowed to put out the fire on top of the Mizbeach. So now you have a problem. A person is pouring wine onto the fire on top of the Mizbeach, he's going to put out the fire. So how do you do that? So the Gemara says, it's a davar shem miskaven. Now, look at Rashi. It's Rashi in source number 11. The reason why it's mutter to pour the wine on the fire is because he doesn't intend to put it out. Rashi asks a simple question. Don't tell me that I'm going to pour wine on top of a fire in the Mizbeach. I didn't have any intention to put the fire out. Come on! You're pouring wine onto a fire. It's just impossible to separate your action. So Rashi says, "Efshur de mezalfli b'tipin dakois ma'oid halakachinam in mechabe b'tipin gasas." Rashi says something amazing. It's possible then he'll pour it in a very, very slow, tiny little drip. A little small drip. And that won't put out the fire, because the fire will be stronger than those little drips. So Rashi says, even if he doesn't do it that way, it's still fine, because it's not inevitable. I could find a way to do it. Now this is just a mind-boggling concept. You know that when you pour your cup of wine full force over the fire, it's going to put out the fire a little bit. But since I could have done it. How does this work? So we have to throw this in just to make sense out of this. Reb Nachum explains, parts of it from the Mir. He's no longer alive, but he was one of the Rosh Hashivas in the Mir. And he explained that according to Rashi, the logic behind Pesuk Resha is that if action A results in B happening, then they're connected. If there's a way that I can do action A and action B doesn't happen, that means they're not connected. That means they're two separate things. Once they're not connected, so then I'm already out of the realm of Pesuk Resha. Pesuk Resha means it's impossible to separate the action. It is absolutely impossible to take a chicken's head off and keep the chicken alive. There is absolutely no way to get it done. Therefore, slicing off its head means killing it. However, since I can prove to you that pouring water on top of the fire in the Mizbeach doesn't put out the fire, I can prove to you because I have a way of doing it. So therefore, even if I do it in a way that does decrease the fire a little bit, it still is never shame eskavim because it's not connected. I'm getting very yeshivish here. But that's the way you have to explain Rashi. Okay, so now we have in front of us is we have a dispute between Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda if Dover Shem Eskavim is mutter or is it aser. What time is it? 48, 2 minutes. Rav Shimon says it's mutter. We paskin like Rav Shimon. If someone does something and he does not intend for there to be a malacha that results from it, the halacha is it's mutter to do that action. If it's a pesuk resha, if it's inevitable that it's going to happen, it's aser. Now, one more concept that we have at the end over here is, you know, let's leave it because we're not going to get to it. Let's just skip to the last thing. What if I'm not sure if it's a pesuk resha? I don't know. Let me give you an example. There's an isser for a person to trap anything on Shabbos. Flies. It's usser to trap flies. Now, I have a box. And the box is a large box. And I don't know if there are any flies in it. Now, I have no intention of trapping flies. I don't really need flies. It's an isser for me to drop on them. I don't need them. I don't care so much about it. But I want to close the box. Now, I have a problem. If I close the box, maybe I trapped a fly. Oh, it's Dover Shem Eskavim. I'm not intending to trap the flies. But it's a pesuk resha. You close the box. There's no way to close the box without trapping the fly. Now, looking inside the box would help me determine if there are any flies in the box. But let's say I, for some reason, can't tell right now. Right? There are other examples of this, but without getting into... We don't have enough time to get into too many examples, but this is a very important concept to internalize because it comes up so many times on Shabbos. I don't know if my action, in other words, I certainly don't intend for the result of trapping to happen. Someone turns on a sink. Now, he has a tank that fills up. When the tank fills up, the pump goes on and pumps the water out of the house. Now, I don't know how much water is in the tank. Maybe turning on this sink will automatically result in me turning on the pump. Maybe not. I'm definitely not intending to turn on the pump now. I don't care if the pump is on now or not. So it's a suffix pesuk resha. I'm not sure if it's a pesuk resha. If the tank is 90% full, then it's a pesuk resha. Then when I wash my hands, I'm going to turn the pump on. If the tank is 30% full, it's not a pesuk resha. Either way, it's davar shem eskavim. What's the halacha? Ultimately, we really kind of ran out of time. In Hilchas Shabbos, the Biur Halacha in Siman Shin Tes Zayin brings a raya from the Ramban that it would be mutter. In Hilchas Yeridea, the Ramah talks about stoking the coals under a pot that may have Basar B'chalav in it. If it has Basar B'chalav, then I didn't intend to cook Basar B'chalav, but it's a Pesuk Resha. Then I cooked Basar B'chalav. If there is no Basar B'chalav in the pot, then I did not. It's a Suffolk Pesuk Resha. Over there it says it's Aser. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger explains that it's also because it's a Safek Midaraisa. Ultimately, the Shvisas HaShabbos, I didn't put it on the paper, but he says when it comes to Shabbos, Suffolk Psikresha Elisha Avar. In other words, a past, a missing past information. I don't know if it's a Psikresha or not. The halacha is, it's mutter. And according to, and when it comes to other areas of halacha, it would be usur. We'll stop here, but we're going to get back to this topic a lot because this comes up. I just shout out two examples, but this comes up all the time at Shabbos. These are fundamental concepts and halachas with regard to Hilchas Shabbos. We'll continue with Hashem next week.